I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right, good morning, and welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB, here weekdays 9 to 11 o'clock. This is your story behind the story, the truth behind the headlines, the lying mainstream media, and the ridiculous two-party and war party propaganda. This is Central Mississippi's safe space here for us independent thinkers. Beholden to no party, no politician. There's a quote I ran across that I almost hope isn't true. I don't know. Says you can sway 1,000 men by appealing to their prejudices quicker than you convince one man by logic. That's Robert A. Heinlein. I'm a big quotes guy. I admire people who can succinctly say something pretty broad in just a sentence or two. That is not me. It takes me 2 hours to flesh out my opinion. But, you know, we'll see if that's really the case. I have apologized to my listeners in the last couple of weeks, saying that I didn't, you know, I soft pedal some things because I don't think that people can handle challenges to the love of party or of politician, but I think I haven't been giving people credit enough. So I've decided to become kind of no holds barred and covering what I want to cover, whether it's positive or negative for Trump or for the Republican Party or for the Democratic Party, whatever it is. I just call things the way I see it. And kind of on that topic, one of the big stories out there right now for this weekend has been this Justin Amash. He is a Republican from Michigan who's come out and said that he does see that there's evidence of an impeachable offense on Donald Trump's behalf. It's big news because he's the Republican that's kind of crossed the aisle here or has risen his hand to say, well, you know, I'm down with that. Now, the thing about Justin Amash that makes it kind of attached to this show is that Justin Amash is a libertarian. So I'm going to do something here. I'm going to show you something that you just don't see very often, and I'll show you how this works and how easy it is. So Justin Amash is a libertarian. I would imagine if I went through his voting record, I would find a lot to like. I listened to some of his stuff before he ever ran for Congress, went into the swamp himself, and I haven't paid that much attention to him, but I've seen some votes that Republicans might not like, because he votes against the party sometimes. When the Republican Party is going for bigger government or more wars, Justin Amash is one of those people that will battle back against him. So some Kool-Aid drinking Republicans won't like him because he's not a team player. But he's come out with this impeachment stuff. So here's what I'm going to show you how you can do this. See, my goal is always to be ideologically consistent, to not allow my love of party or of politician or of anything like that to cloud what I think are the facts. And so I do not support him on this. How about that? See, I don't have to, because he's a libertarian, endorse every single thing he does and then twist logic all in knots to say why he's right about this. Now, I will say, I have not read the Mueller report. He reads the Mueller report and says that he finds evidence of some kind of obstruction. To me, the Mueller report, first of all, starts off as a deep state Robert Mueller, as much as Republicans were taught to worship Robert Mueller as he was FBI director. He's a strong law enforcement guy for us. Don't pay any attention to the fact that as the head of the FBI, he helped cover up the Saudi involvement in 9/11 for 14 years. We're told that he's a strong. I heard somebody the other day, I think it was Anthony Scaramucci, the Mooch, who was in the Trump administration for about 11 days, came out and he said that he thought Mueller was of impeccable integrity. Didn't know the man, but my understanding is that he's not. I mean, Robert Mueller's been part of the Washington swamp for years and years. The Mueller report, obviously staffed with Democrats too, in what actually was a witch hunt against Donald Trump. I just don't care too much about it. That's why I don't cover it here. It is pure politics and political theater, so I do not care. I believe Justin Amash is horribly wrong on this, and not only is he wrong, it's politically a bad move, and he's got a lot of baggage in that area when he's so easy to untangle the fact that his family has got business ties with China, and he's probably going to be affected negatively by Trump's trade war with China and the tariffs on Chinese goods coming in. This is a loser for Justin Amash. I think he made a huge mistake doing this. I do not support him in this, but I may support him in his next vote if he votes to shrink the size of government. See, that's normal to me because I'm not in love with Justin Amash. Just because he's a libertarian does not mean I'm going to support him in every single thing he does. Now, he's a Republican, and I believe that more libertarians in the Republican Party are what the Republican Party needs if they want to actually get back to their constitutional limited government governing at some point. I don't know if they'll ever get back around to that or not, but if they were, I believe that putting libertarians into the Republican side of things, people like Rand Paul and Thomas Massie, who's fantastic from Kentucky. But look, if Thomas Massie does something that I think is wrong or dumb, or he's exposed for some corruption or something like that, guess what I'll do? As much of a fan as I am of Thomas Massie, I will say Thomas Massie's wrong on this one. I will not support him if he does something wrong. See, this is being consistent. See, what we do in the United States is we elect somebody and then they can't do anything wrong because we've invested our entire personality in that person. We have told our friends that we support them. We have told our enemies that they're libtards, or on the left, you call your friends Nazis if they support Trump. And so you line up behind Hillary and you have to fend off every attack on Hillary rather than just admitting that she is wrong in so many ways, that she's a criminal, that the things she's done are incredibly sketchy and corrupt. That's what American politics is now. We fall in love, and then we have to defend, we have to twist logic, we have to defy all reason to support something that... And the funny thing is that people take positions almost monthly. A politician can come out and say one thing one month, and they can do a 180-degree turn, and all their followers make that same turn with them. They just cannot hold anybody accountable. On this show, I'll hold anybody and everybody accountable. Probably the person that I have the most respect for that's been in American politics, at least to my knowledge, is going to be Ron Paul, Congressman Ron Paul from Texas. Very conservative, very constitutional, very well-reasoned, very anti-war, very humble, very a good human being by most accounts in his real life. He was an OBGYN, and instead of advocating for Medicare for all or single-payer health care, he actually delivered babies for free for people that needed that. But if Ron Paul were to come out tomorrow with some opinion that I'd oppose, I will come on this air and I will challenge Ron Paul because I don't fall in love anymore. I spent the 1990s pretty in love with the Republican Party, and they broke my heart. So I've learned my lesson. I am hardened and chastened. I will not fall for that again. Justin Amash, I believe, is very, very wrong on this thing. Politically, bad move. Personally, a bad move. He's got these ties to China. And just because he's a libertarian does not mean that I'm going to agree with everything he does or defend him. And that's the way we would get our country back. If people would look at Donald Trump and judge him by his actions on a day-to-day basis rather than a massive love affair with the man, we might actually turn the tide of the American culture, the direction of this country. When Donald Trump says he campaigns on bogus financial figures and the ridiculous asset bubbles, the big, fat, ugly bubble he called during his campaign, I cheered for him, and he gets into office and now he wants to blow up the bubble even more. I will not support him on that. But everybody will now convince themselves that actually he needs to have the same zero interest rates because Obama had them. It wasn't fair. Look what Obama got. I mean, it's childish. And those things that Donald Trump is living up to from his campaign promises that I supported at the time, I will support those too. Ditto for Democrats. Democrats do the same thing. They cheer for Barack Obama, who did absolutely nothing for him. It was a cult of personality with Obama, and we have doubled down on that with Donald Trump on both sides. People either hate everything he does or they love everything he does, and there is no independent thinking, no independent assessment of action after action after action. I've got some of them today that are pretty discouraging. I ask on Friday with this Iran situation, if there was a false flag attack, would Donald Trump be tricked into it like he was with Syria when he launched 200 Tomahawk missiles in two separate incidents based on attacks that didn't happen or manufactured gas attacks in Syria? And Donald Trump launched these attacks. Well, the answer is in, apparently. I'm sure you've heard the news that a rocket was launched towards the American embassy in Iraq. And Donald Trump put out a tweet that is just terrifying to me. Certainly he cannot believe this stuff. We're going to get to that, but I may even take a break. I found a clip from Paul Harvey. Yeah, probably a lot of Paul Harvey fans out there. Very interesting man, not with us any longer. This is a clip from 1965. You know, we ignore the words of the founding fathers in favor of our politicians of today. Politicians of today somehow talk us out of, you know, the advice of the founding fathers who put forth the greatest country that God has ever known. And instead, we decide to ignore them in favor of current day politicians. Paul Harvey gave us a warning back in 1965. I'm going to play some of this clip. It's actually kind of long. I don't think I'll play the whole thing, but it's very interesting. Paul Harvey saw what was coming. And when you listen to this and think about this being a 50-year-old clip, it's pretty amazing. We ignored Paul Harvey's advice. I'm going to play that when I come back. I thought it was very interesting.
If you need an experienced lawyer that you can trust, contact the law firm of Danks, Miller & Corey. Our lawyers represent clients and small businesses across Mississippi. With over 100 years of combined legal experience, we have the expertise to handle even the most complex legal matters. When you need a lawyer to fight for you, don't compromise. Call Danks, Miller & Corey. You can reach us at 601-957-3101, 601-957-3101, or online at danksmillercorey.com.
We're going to bring back a voice from the past for just a second. I just kind of stumbled across this audio of Paul Harvey. This apparently is from a 1965 recording that Paul Harvey made. Now, some people may hear my rants on this show and just think, oh, that's just he's a radical. He's not dealing in reality. He's criticizing every element of our government. You know, this it's the brainwashing that's taken place over the years is that we need the government for everything. And Republicans tell you, you know, that they're not going to repeal Obamacare. They're going to repeal and replace. See, they get the Republicans onto the government thing, too. They're fashioning an entire new Republican plan for health care based on the CHIP program because it was, heaven forbid, we just give this thing out to the free market. See, I mean, everything is tilting towards bigger and bigger and bigger government. I say the proper income tax rate is zero, while the Republican Party and the Democratic Party wrestle over how much they think they deserve. The federal government takes in over $2 trillion a year in fees and tariffs and other things, corporate taxes. I say they should be able to make it on that and leave us alone. And that's somehow a radical, marginalized idea that you can't even really talk about. That's just being silly. And that's the reason it's silly is because the people don't demand it. We're not as bold as the French, who have been in the streets now for 26 weeks, demanding that they change their ways over there. Anyway, if you think the threats to our way of life are coming from Iran or North Korea or Venezuela because Fox News or ABC brought some war profiteer onto television to tell you that that is the case, if you think Muslims are the existential threat to your way of life and the most important thing in the world right now, that we don't conquer the Middle East and get all these radicals, Muslims out of here, we're going to lose our country. If you think that those are the biggest challenges that this country face, listen to this. I mean, you know, empires are brought down from within. And this is where we stand right now. And again, this is 1965. I just found this very interesting, just from a 50-year clip. And just think about, these are Paul Harvey's words, words of warning, and where we've come since he made these words.
At Runnymede, the Magna Carta was handed to King John on the end of a sword, denying to royalty the right of unlimited taxation. Yet you know, it was for us, the American people, to become the first in recorded history ever voluntarily to surrender our rights to private property. Yes, we did. With an innocent-sounding constitutional amendment, the 16th, which says that Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes on incomes from whatever source derived, and we forgot to put any limit on the extent to which we could tax ourselves. Conceivably, we could be taxed out of all private property. We could be taxed not 70%, 80%, 90%, but 100%. We could awaken one morning and find that the government owns the farm and the house and the car and has a mortgage on the church, legally. Historically, whenever any nation has taxed its people more than 25% of their national income, initiative was destroyed and that nation was headed for economic eclipse. History says we'll roll forward on momentum for a little while, but we'd better get some more gas in the tank pretty quick. You see, ours is not the first by George good government to arise on the world stage. There have been several. Rome, Spain, and Greece, and China, and each enjoyed about 150 years at its zenith. That's just about our time in the New World. And then each decayed away. Not one of them was ever destroyed by anybody else's marching legions. Each rotted away, morally, socially, culturally, economically, simultaneously. You know, one of the most cruel paradoxes of history is this. Because each was a good government, it bore bountiful fruit. And when it bore bountiful fruit, the people got fat. And when they got fat, they got lazy. And when they got lazy, they began to want to absolve themselves of personal responsibility and turn over to government to do for them things which traditionally they had been doing for themselves. At first, there appears to be nothing wrong asking government to perform some extra service for you, but if you ask government for extra services, government, in order to perform its increasing function, has to get bigger, right? And as government gets bigger, in order to support its increasing size, it has to what? Tax the individual more, so the individual gets littler. And to collect the increased taxes requires more tax collectors, so the government gets bigger. And in order to pay the additional tax collectors, it has to tax the individual more, so the government gets bigger and the individual gets littler. And the government gets bigger and the individual gets littler, until the government is all-powerful. The individual is hardly anything at all. The government is all-powerful. The people are cattle. Now, some believe that the need is for a vigorous, strong man to arise on the scene, to regulate and regiment the affairs of men. Yet history tells us there have been several such. Once upon a time, there was a nation great and powerful and good. She was suffering from the aftermath of war, from a depression. And then came upon the scene a leader, an idealist, self-confident, intolerant of criticism. Wisely, he limited his early activities to combating the financial depression. Nobody could argue with that. But in a while, he began to regulate business and establish new rules to govern commerce and finance. Some of them in diametrical disagreement with the God-made laws of supply and demand, but anybody who disagreed with those new rules was promptly fired. The national debt mounted alarmingly. Whenever anybody tried to tell him that governments, even as people, can go broke when they spend beyond their incomes, he said they just didn't understand deficit finance. Well, what do you say? Did he build on rock or on sand? I say on sand. I am satisfied with all my heart that if Uncle Sam ever does get whipped, here too, it will have been an inside job. It was internal decay. It was not external attack that destroyed the Roman Empire. Starting about 146 B.C., internal conditions in Rome were characterized by a welter of class wars and conflicts, street brawls, corrupt governors, lack of personal integrity and moral responsibility. And Rome passed into what history has recorded as the Dark Ages, lasting 1,000 years. Just by turning to the left, the world has gone in circles. Now either we will profit from the errors of their ways, or it follows us the night, the day, our children are going to have to relive the Dark Ages all over again. How come, after thousands of years of experiment, our new nation has come so far so fast? All this in less than 200 years. What is the secret of our success? Well, I think it had to do with a basic American's creed. Perhaps it never passed the pioneer's lips in this form, but if it had, I think he would have said something like this. I believe in my God, in my country, and in myself. I know that sounds like a trite, too simple thing to say, and yet it's a rare man today who will dare to stand up and say, I believe in my God and my country and in myself, and in that order. Well, sir, when that early pioneer turned his eyes toward the West, he didn't demand that somebody else look after him. He didn't demand a free education. He didn't demand a guaranteed rocking chair at eventide. He didn't demand that somebody else take care of him if he got ill or got old. There was an old-fashioned philosophy in those days that a man was supposed to provide for his own and for his own future. He didn't demand a maximum amount of money for a minimum amount of work. Nor did he expect pay for no work at all. Come to think of it, he didn't demand anything. That hard-handed pioneer just looked out there at the rolling plains, stretching away to the tall green mountains, and then lifted his eyes to the blue skies and said, thank you, God. Now I can take it from here.
This goes on just a little bit longer, running a little bit short, a little bit long on time. It's just it's pretty fascinating stuff. Again, that clip is 50 years old. And if we stop and take a look at where we've come since then, and the problem is, the problem that I see anyway, is that most people listening to this station are going to be on the right. They're going to be conservatives. Somebody has said, and I can't remember who to attribute the quote to, that Republicans are just progressives going the speed limit. Everything, as I say, instead of repealing Obamacare and returning to the free market, the Republicans now want to replace it with something new. They want to do something government. And the Republican Congress has now have spent over $4 trillion for a couple of years in a row and racked up over $1 trillion worth of debt. And that's really the best we have right now, because obviously we know if the Democrats were to take over and the leftists took control of this government, the deficits would skyrocket. We would go bankrupt that much quicker. There's no doubt about it. But the fact that us on the right, as we've fallen in love with a party, you're falling in love with politicians who plug into that party, and we won't stop them from doing what the left wants to do a little faster, but we allow them to do it just a little bit slower. And I just absolutely, when I got in love with that clip when this is Paul Harvey in 1965 pointing out the fact that the 16th Amendment suddenly allowed our government to reach into our pockets and take part of our payroll, and how just disgusting that is. Because that was 1965. I guess it was still new enough to call it out. And now it's because 50 years later, the income tax code is so entrenched that Americans just believe this is the way that you run a government, that it's the price you pay for a civilized society. Well, I guess back in 1965, at least Paul Harvey and maybe some other people weren't so brainwashed. Not enough time had passed to where it became something that you couldn't imagine being without. And so there was still some hope of actual true freedom in this country. Anyway, Paul Harvey, kind of a national treasure. It's a shame he's gone. I'll be right back.
Think back to your childhood. I bet you can recall that one person who was always tattling on you. You took an extra cookie from the jar. They told mom. Didn't brush your teeth before bed. They ratted you out. Well, our own bodies are a lot like those childhood tattletales, consistently giving us reports of our health and well-being. Naturally You, a nutrition response testing center, uses a natural, scientific, and non-invasive system of analyzing your body to discover the underlying causes of ill health. Certified practitioners at Naturally You use your body's neurological reflexes and acupuncture points to determine what nutrients your body needs, then designs a dietary supplement program based on your body and condition. If you have struggled with weight, fatigue, or ongoing health issues, Naturally You invites you to join them this Tuesday night for a free workshop. Visit naturallyyou.fit to reserve your spot. That's naturallyyou.fit.
Thank you.
One of the big stories making the rounds I saw in the morning shows and shows yesterday was a pretty interesting story if you follow this. The Robert Smith, billionaire philanthropist and technology investor, told students in the graduating class at Morehouse College they would wipe out the entire student debt of the graduating class, estimated to be around $40 million. According to Time magazine, Robert F. Smith, this year's commencement speaker, made the announcement Sunday morning while addressing nearly 400 graduating seniors of the all-male, historically black college in Atlanta. Smith is founder and CEO of Vista Equity Partners, a private equity firm that invests in software, data, and technology-driven companies. What he said at the on the speech was, on behalf of the eight generations of my family that have been in this country, we're going to put a little fuel in your bus. This is my class, 2019, and my family is making a grant to eliminate their student loans. Stunned students looked around in disbelief upon the announcement before breaking into wild applause. I'm sure they did. Morehouse said it is the single largest gift ever given to the university. Now, this is portrayed in the mainstream media just one way that I've seen anyway, which is you know, a stunning announcement, a big gesture by somebody who has the money to do this. The guy's a billionaire. And in the talk of student loans, we've got $1.5 trillion of student loans out there crippling future generations. There were numbers in this story. I believe one student said he had $200,000 of student loans coming out of Morehouse College. I don't even really know how that's possible, but that was the quote in the story. But students across the country, there's actually a story, I may even get to it. There's things up on Drudge right now about how millennials are in worse financial condition than previous generations, as are Gen Zers. And we've seen this coming. I mean, you know, this is, and many people will reactively just say, they're lazy. Millennials are worthless. They're all social justice warriors. But that's not the case. There certainly are some of them, but there's ne'er-do-wells in every generation. We have piled debt and inflation on our kids. We've created a financial house of cards here in this country, and our kids are going to suffer for it. And we're starting to see this now from some of the first generations that will do worse than generations before them. And I lay this at the feet of the greatest generation, the baby boomers, and my generation, Generation X, which did absolutely nothing to rein in this out-of-control system that has really hollowed out the core of the United States. But what's left out of the story about Robert Smith is the fact that Bernie Sanders won't tackle this. Elizabeth Warren won't tackle this. Nobody on the left will tackle this. And certainly the mainstream media does not appear to phrase this story in this particular way. Here's a guy who went out and worked his butt off in a capitalist system and acquired great wealth. And now he can help a class of, what was it, 400? $40 million for these people. They didn't need the government to wipe out, forgive their student loans. They had a guy come in and do something with his wealth. And apparently the guy's a big philanthropist. Now, I have a couple issues with Robert F. Smith and how he acquired such tremendous wealth, because he's been a Goldman Sachs guy. And Goldman Sachs is so tied to the government, and it is the vampire squid. Goldman Sachs has been the beneficiary of government policies and things like that. But I don't begrudge Robert F. Smith. He's played the game, and he's played it well, and he's ended up being a billionaire, and now he apparently does some good with his money, particularly for the black community. It's what most people want to see. We want to see people in the communities help people in the communities, not the government have to be the one that takes from every taxpayer. You want to take from some middle-class couple in West Virginia that's struggling to make ends meet. You want to pick their pocket through taxation and pay for homelessness in Los Angeles. It just makes no sense. But here were some interesting things that should be pointed out about Robert F. Smith. In high school, he applied for an internship at Bell Labs, but was told the program was intended for college students. Smith persisted, calling every day. When a student from MIT did not show up, he got the position, and that summer he developed a reliability test for semiconductors at Cornell. He became a brother of Alpha Phi Alpha. After working at Air Products and Chemicals, Goodyear Tire and Rubber Company, and later at Kraft General Foods as a chemical engineer, where he earned 2 United States and 2 European patents, he attended Columbia Business School. Earned an MBA with honors, specializing in finance and marketing. And then he took a little turn to the dark side. From 1994 to 2000, he joined Goldman Sachs in technology investment banking. What, I mean, I tell you what, talk about timing. Well, this guy nailed it. Just imagine this. 1994 to 2000, he got into technology investment banking. This is really when tech was taking off, obviously leading to the dot-com craze. But the bottom line is that this guy went out and killed it. He went out and made some money. And obviously he applied himself, even the fact that he worked for Goldman Sachs. I can guarantee you this guy has put in 100-hour weeks, easy, for probably a large, large chunk of his life. And then he's able to acquire wealth and help people himself without the government, without any programs set up. And hopefully it would just be really nice if at least these Morehouse College students kind of were taught, hey, look, this is how this country's set up to work. You've got a ton of opportunity out here. You go out, you work hard, and then you can help the next generation if you choose. Some people might not choose that. But the bottom line is that freedom and free markets is what makes this economy, is what improves the lives of people around them. It's not government programs. It's not the people who gave this one kid $200,000 for a Morehouse College education. That number is still staggering to me, but anyway, it is that should be the lesson of this, yet it's not mentioned anywhere. There were some other interesting things about him, but he's got a very, very long, very, very long Wikipedia page, so you can look up Robert F. Smith and see what he's done. Done a great deal of work for black causes, prostate cancer treatment for black men, breast cancer research for black women. You know, and so this is somebody who goes out and succeeds and then turns around and gives back to their community. This is what should be encouraged. Not just all we talk about is the giveaway of money, the philanthropic thing. The funny thing I thought when I immediately saw that is, do you know how this has to be his last college commencement speech ever, unless he's prepared to pay off all of the student loans for another school. He can never make another one, because if he were ever to be invited as a commencement speaker, everybody would show up thinking, oh my gosh, we got Robert F. Smith. Our student loans are gone. If he did not deliver on that, he would probably be chased out of the stadium. So he did his big move there. And it is, it's a good story. It's a good story of success and passing something on and helping your community without the government getting involved. And as I say, this kind of dovetails on what Paul Harvey was talking about. You know, we, even on the conservative and the right side of things, believe that we've got to have Social Security and Medicare, we got to have these things. And who would, we've accepted the left's argument that says that poor people will die in the streets if we don't have government come in here and provide health care for these people. And, you know, people used to take care of each other like this. This is what communities were built around, and families were built around taking care of them. And now, instead of, you know, us being responsible for our kids and our neighbors and our loved ones, if they make a detour in drugs, we want the government to come in and snatch them out of their homes and throw them into a cage, because that's what will keep, you know, it's just, we look to the government to fix all of these problems, and it's pervasive throughout our society. One more program, a little bit more money into education. We just got to rebuild this military. We just always, it's always looking to the government on all sides of the political spectrum now. And it's hollowing out the core of this country. Anyway, thought that was a little perspective on that story. I'll finish up in just a second. Then we're going to talk about, I don't want to talk about Iran every single day, but it's in the headlines every single day. And Donald Trump has made a comment on it that I think should be concerning to most people. Whether it is or not, I'm not sure. I'll be right back. All night with the king. Food allergies know how difficult it can be to find quality, affordable restaurants that cater to your needs. That's why the folks over at Your Pie have made a commitment to ensure everyone can enjoy great-tasting pizza. Your Pie offers gluten-free dough, vegan, non-dairy cheese, and non-dairy sorbet. Just ask for it next time you're in line. Matter of fact, just mention any allergy you have, and the folks at Your Pie will go over the top to make sure you can safely enjoy their delicious food. That's Your Pie in Gluckstadt, where food allergies never stop you from being able to express your inner pizza.
Right into this world, all alone. God takes your soul,
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Saw something on Breitbart thing. Alveda King, this is a winning argument here. Alveda King, the niece of Martin Luther King, came out. She did an interview on Breitbart News. Dr. Alveda King, director of Priests for Life's Civil Rights for the Unborn Project and the niece of Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., told Breitbart News that the recently passed pro-life laws in states like Georgia and Alabama seek to grant, quote, civil rights, unquote, to babies in the womb and protect women, not punish them. That is such a winning argument. That is really where the focus of the pro-life movement should be, and I just absolutely love that from Alveda King. And that's what the argument's about, is just a difference on whether or not you view a baby in the womb as actually a baby and not just part of the woman. But I love the idea of the civil rights for the child. I've got a caller on the line. Hey, caller, are you with me?
Hey, Mike, it's Nielsen.
Hey, Nielsen, how are you?
I'm doing good. I just want to comment on the whole student loan repay thing.
Yeah.
I paid off my student loans.
Yeah.
You know how I did it? I got a job.
Huh.
And every month I paid some of my loan off until it was done. My wife has paid off her student loans. And the thing that I fear about all this talk about, oh, free this and free that, is they're not going to have the attitude as soon as they get out of college to start working and start paying off these loans. If I didn't start doing that the day that I started making real money, I would never have paid it off. If I would have just kept hoping that one day the government was going to pay it, you know what I mean? Then I would really have been in trouble.
Oh, and I think it's going to be a big issue.
Irresponsible.
I think in 2020 you're going to see an issue, and I think you're going to see the Republican Party. They're going to fight the student debt problem has gotten so big that I think the Republicans are going to make moves towards doing something about it too, simply for votes. And we're going to see another big government solution. And the thing that's aggravating to me is the reason that the student loan problem is so bad is because of the government in the first place. They give anybody who can fog a mirror the ability to borrow tens of thousands and sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars that they would not qualify if it were a private thing. We've got 10% of student loans that are in default right now. That's $150 billion are in default. If the federal government wasn't there guaranteeing every loan, we wouldn't have ever gotten into this problem in the first place.
I still think it's got to come down to personal accountability, because if everybody else gets theirs paid off, I want my $40,000.
Exactly.
Back.
I mean,
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Because I paid mine off. And I'm not some guy sitting there asking for a handout. I went to school and I paid my bill.
I totally agree with you. How fair is that? Yeah. And you're going to have that kind of that kind of problem. I mean, this is one of those problems that the government solves and there is no good solution. Yet politicians are going to come and tell you they're going to fix it or do whatever. But you're exactly right. How does that feel? I mean, there's somebody will pay off their final student loan payment the day that they come out and say, well, we're going to give forgiveness to all these people or something like that. I mean, how does that make you feel? It just builds resentment.
I spent 15 years paying mine off.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I did that because it was my bill. And what I'm saying is it's irresponsible to even have these kind of discussions, because you're giving people this fantasy that they're not going to have to be responsible for their own financial choices in life. And that is dangerous. People need to know that they need to start making money to pay back their loans when they get out of college. If they're under some preconceived notion that everything's just going to work out in the end, they're not going to take that responsibility for themselves.
Well, so do you disagree with this Robert Smith who gave all this money to that graduating class?
No, that's great.
Yeah.
He had a personal choice to do that.
Right.
And I applaud it.
Yeah.
I applaud that. Heck, somebody can give me money. I ain't going to say no to it. But I'm just saying, trying to put in these people's heads that the government's just going to take care of everything one day, and that you're never going to have to pay off your loans, is stupid, and it's irresponsible to do to our children that are going to school and getting this debt.
Yeah, and I'd like to listen.
It's irresponsible to tell them that they're not going to have to pay it.
I'd like to listen to the rest of his speech, because it might have a real impact because the media is not going to portray it this way. But if he said, look, I've worked my tail off my entire life, and now I can do this, and now you have an opportunity, unencumbered by this debt, to go off and make something of yourself and then pass this along, you know, to empower the individual to make differences in the lives of their community. It's a powerful message, actually, and it actually unshackles everybody from, like what you're talking about, this idea that the government's going to come in and rescue you at the last minute.
Well, I just think it's, even at some level, like forgiving anyone's debt is just bad. It's just bad for them, because you never learn financial responsibility for your own actions. Yeah. But that's all I got, man.
Yeah. All right. Appreciate it, Nielsen. I appreciate the call. Yeah, and I totally agree with them. I mean, this is, you know, again, the thing from somebody like myself is that I know why the student loan problem is so bad. And it's the government that causes it, and then the government, then you've got politicians. This is classic. I mean, this is what happens constantly. The government creates a mess. Look at health care. The government creates a mess and then tells you how they're going to come in and solve it. And we line up at the polling places to vote for our party that we think is going to solve this mess. We all agree it's a mess. And the Democrats say that they're going to solve it by doing more of what we've already been doing. The Republicans are going to solve it by doing a different kind of thing, but kind of the same thing, a government takeover of health care. I mean, this is pure insanity. The same with foreign policy. We go around and make a mess around the world and create crises and create terrorism. And then we say we're going to, if we just get a little couple of $100 billion more, we'll go out there and we'll tackle this mess for you. And people line up on either side of the aisle when it comes to polling time, when it comes to voting day. Everybody lines up for their person who they think is going to use the government to solve the problem that the government created in the first place. I've said this a million times. You can call this station with any problem that you really see plaguing our country right now. And I can just about, I think, I mean, I haven't actually put this to the test, but I think I can gear you right back to how the government caused that problem in the first place, the really big problems. And it's just, it's endless. And that's why I'm the person on here for 2 hours just saying this two-party system, the system that we've wrought, there are no heroes, there are no saviors, because they're all plugged into the same system of the government doing more and more and more. It will not work. People need to free themselves from that and understand that until we starve this beast, until we dismantle this system that we have, we're not going to make any real progress, just promises of progress. I'll be right back.
Mike Madison here. All of us should be flying our U.S. flag. And now's the perfect time to contact a Complete Flag Source to have a flagpole installed at your home or business. For a limited time, all U.S. flags up to 5x8 along with flagpole setups are 15% off. That's 15, 20, and 25-foot in-ground kits, sectional, and aluminum. House spinner poles will keep your flag from wrapping in the wind, and a Complete Flag Source has all of the right brackets. Visit a Complete Flag Source, I-55 North Frontage Road, Jackson, or online at CompleteFlags.com.
I need your arms around me. I need to feel your touch. I need your understanding. I need your love so much.
All right, we're back. This is the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. The number here at the studio is 601-879-0002. If you'd like to join the show. We're going to do some foreign policy stuff. This show's just not for snowflakes of any type on the left or on the right, and I see them just about everywhere. It was interesting. I don't know what was more interesting to me. There's a story on The Hill. Donald Trump, I've got problems with many of his tweets. I'd say probably about 75% of Donald Trump's tweets, I think, could go without being said. I don't think they necessarily serve him. They're good about rallying the base, but the base is so with Donald Trump that I don't think he needs them. He apparently was very upset. What's his name? Pete Buttigieg. Am I even saying his name right? Pete Buttigieg, the mayor from South Bend, Indiana, had another town hall, I guess, on Fox News and got a standing ovation. This was a top headline on Drudge. And then there's this idea, I can't see the difference in this. Maybe someone can enlighten me. When Ann Coulter or Milo Yiannopoulos or any of the conservative pundits want to go onto a college campus, the left freaks out. You've got knitted hat wearing social justice warriors on their knees in front of the venue crying to the heavens, please don't let this person speak. They will resort to violence and smashing windows, and setting cars on fire and taking over administration buildings to stop some conservative speaker from coming onto campus. And rightfully, people on the right and conservatives and free speech people will come out and say, this is ridiculous. Let the person speak. We look at these places. We look at the campuses on California. We look at Berkeley when Antifa shows up to stop a conservative speaker from going onto a college campus, and we say, this is ridiculous. We have a right to free speech here, and we, you know, more ideas are better, You hear a lot of different ideas. You get to make up your mind. At least I base this whole show on that because I give you some different ideas on the show. Yet there's this big gnashing of teeth and crying out on the right when a Democrat goes on to Fox News. And I don't know if we're scared that somehow these Democrats are going to convince Fox News viewers to vote Democrat. I mean, I don't really know what the fear is, but apparently it's a big issue for a Democrat to go on there. And Donald Trump weighed in on that. Let's see what his tweet was. Hard to believe that Fox News is wasting airtime on Mayor Pete, as Chris Wallace likes to call him. Fox is moving more and more to the losing, wrong side and covering the Dems. They got dumped from the Democrats' boring debates, and they just want in. They forgot the people who got them there. Chris Wallace said, quote, "I actually think whether you like his opinions or not, that Mayor Pete has a lot of substance, fascinating biography." Trump goes on to say in this tweet, "Gee, he never speaks well of me. I like Mike Wallace better, and Alfred E. Newman will never be president." I don't get the point. That's punching down. I think he's exactly right. This guy's not ever going to be president, so why does he care? But the thing about this, I looked at this story, and as I am prone to do, scrolled down into the comments section. There are almost 4,000 comments on this story. I almost encourage you to go look at it just to show you. You know, I started the show off with this Paul Harvey clip where he explained to us in 1965 that this country is not going to be beaten militarily. The way that this country is going to fall is from within. And I got to tell you, what's going on right now in the political world is what's going to lead us down this. There are 4,000, since I just opened this thing up a few minutes, there's 4,191 now comments, 92 comments, 93 comments. That's how fast they're pouring in on this story. Trump tweeting about letting Mayor Pete Buttigieg have a town hall on Fox. This is on the Hill. The story is titled "Trump Hits Fox for Wasting Airtime." You could just go do an internet search for that if you want to take a look at it. I encourage, if you don't see mass insanity, this is 4,000 people fighting with each other on this story. Does this story matter anything in the context of anything whatsoever? So Buttigieg, who's on the campaign trail, he's obviously going to be speaking for the next year and a half or 6 months until he gets put out of the Democratic primary or whatever happens to him. It is 4,000 comments of people calling each other nasty names, belittling each other, strangers, little keyboard warriors, sitting in their offices or on their couches or in their mom's basement or whatever, screaming at some stranger they don't even know. And it's back and forth. Well, you know, it's just everything. It's everything you can imagine. It's the Clintons versus the Trumps in here. Well, you know, Trump's a criminal. And then someone says, well, Hillary was a criminal too. I mean, it's just, I got to tell you, if you're doing this, if you're engaged in social media or in comment sections or anything like this as a keyboard yelling at somebody who disagrees with you online, you are doing nothing but damage to yourself. And this is just it's mass mental illness as far as I'm concerned. Since I've been speaking, there's another 10 comments weighing in on this great battle to keep us all separated. But when it comes to tweets, I was extremely disappointed. Disappointed to see this one from Donald Trump. I've been asking, what's going to happen with the Iran situation should a false flag attack happen or even some minor skirmish? Because the bar that's been set by our foreign policy team is that if Iran or any of their proxies, which would be some of the Houthis in Yemen, any of the Shiite militias that are currently operating in Iraq with Iraq's government's permission and engagement, if any of these groups does anything to attack our guys or any American interests, that's a very vague term. I wish they would define what American interests are. But this is where it is right now. If any of those things happen, then there's going to be hell to pay. And right on cue, there was an attack, a close call on the American embassy in Iraq. A day after, it was interesting, actually it was, I think, on the day that the Iraqis were holding a vote in parliament whether or not to kick us out of their country after our 15 years of being there and rebuilding their country, there was an attack somewhere close to the American embassy. Trump tweeted on this, because I asked on Friday, if something like this happens, this is so ripe for a false flag attack. We've just seen these Saudi Arabian ships dented by something, and of course, immediately it was Iran that did this. If something happens, will Donald Trump go along with the because he is going to be forced into some level of action. Because the vast majority of American people are too stupid, they're too big of a sucker to ever know when they're being played by a deep state foreign policy team that wants war with Iran. After this attack, Trump tweeted, quote, "If Iran wants to fight, that will be the official end of Iran. Never threaten the United States again, exclamation point. This was a Sunday afternoon tweet by Donald Trump. Now, I don't know what other people think about this. It's funny, there's a meme that's going around that says, you know, if Iran didn't want to tangle with the United States, maybe they shouldn't have put their country in the middle of all of our military bases. But just for the love of God, think about this for just a second. You've got the deep state. And again, I think maybe I should open up next segment with the Wesley Clark Seven Countries clip, where back in 2001, Iran was named as a target of overthrow by the U.S. government. Yeah, I think I will play that because it bears repeating. It should be repeated just about every day because most people think that, oh, it's Iran's aggressive actions today, or John Bolton or Mike Pompeo, the whale and the walrus, may come out and tell you that, well, they've been supporting terrorists in this country or that country, and this is why. No, this decision was made prior to 2001 that Iran's government would be toppled for whatever psychopathic reason that they have. This foreign policy team, this deep state foreign policy team of John Bolton, Mike Pompeo, Gina Haspel at the CIA, people like Lindsey Graham and Marco Rubio have been itching for war with Iran for decades now. They've imposed just crippling sanctions on Iran, which are, by the way, acts of war. We cripple them and poke them and prod them and surround them. And then if anything happens, the bar is set so low right now. If anything happens, not just Iran, not the government of Iran having to do it, if any of their proxies, if some Shiite militia group that's operating in Iraq right now, and you know why they're in Iraq, don't you? Well, because we toppled Saddam Hussein. And so now Iran has more influence on Iraq than it used to. They used to be a counterbalance. We took out one side of the counterbalance, and now Iran is more powerful over there. Again, like I said before the break, name me a problem, and I'll point to the government genesis of that problem. And here's another one of them. We overthrew Iraq, and so now Iran has more power there. If anybody does anything to harm any of our troops or one of our interests, our allies or a U.S. interest, that's as broad a category as be, then this thing could be off to the races. I'm going to come back, too, with a clip of Tom Cotton. Now, I bet you there's a bunch of Tom Cotton fans out there because he's very tough. He's a veteran. He's very strong. Again, I'm trying to break apart this propaganda. Tom Cotton has a prediction on how things would go in Iran. I played the other day a clip that mashed together the rhetoric before the Iraq War, superimposed with the rhetoric as we're telling everybody how we're going to handle Iran, and it was so similar. It was interspersed with, you know, John Bolton and George W., Bill Clinton when Iraq War was going on, and all of the language is essentially the same. We point out these enemies and say how we're going to dispatch with them quickly. Tom Cotton's got, he says the Iran thing is going to be an easy, just a cakewalk. Don't be led by people like Tom Cotton. I'll be right back.
Think back to your childhood. I bet you can recall that one person who was always tattling on you. You took an extra cookie from the jar. They told mom. Didn't brush your teeth before bed. They ratted you out. Well, our own bodies are a lot like those childhood tattletales, consistently giving us reports of our health and well-being. Naturally You, a nutrition response testing center, uses a natural, scientific, and non-invasive system of analyzing your body to discover the underlying causes of ill health. Certified practitioners at Naturally You use your body's neurological reflexes and acupuncture points to determine what nutrients your body needs, then designs a dietary supplement program based on your body and condition. If you have struggled with weight, fatigue, or ongoing health issues, Naturally You invites you to join them this Tuesday night for a free workshop. Visit naturallyyou.fit to reserve your spot. That's naturallyyou.fit.
One thing that I don't think that people understand or really comprehend. Mike Pompeo, well, let me say this first. I believe that if Donald Trump is dragged into a war, and I don't think he wants it, I think he knows that it's a terrible idea. He's being given horribly bad advice, and he's got a terrible foreign policy team in place right now. Maybe other presidents, if we had President Hillary Clinton, this thing may have already been kicked off. Donald Trump will probably be dragged into this war by his foreign policy teams. People would say, well, you know, I see. But I think that if war with Iran starts between now and the 2020 elections, Donald Trump loses his presidency probably pretty much in a landslide. And so you think, well, they obviously are making these political calculations, Mike, and there's no way that his foreign policy team would put him into an untenable situation for re-election. Here's the bottom line. Mike Pompeo, who is our current Secretary of State, who is running around trying to get everybody on our side for the impending action that he wants to take on Iran, is planning on leaving the administration anyway, and I believe he's going to be running for the Senate for Kansas in 2020 anyway. He doesn't care if Trump gets another term. John Bolton is a Washington snake that has been slithering around the swamp for decades. He will go right back into one of his think tanks or anywhere else where the defense contractors continue to give him the lifestyle that he's become accustomed to. This is John Bolton, by the way, who said of Vietnam, I have no desire to go over there and die in the jungle, when he avoided going to Vietnam. Now, your national security advisor, who has got the lives of tens of thousands of American troops in his hands, and he seems not to be too concerned with it. This is Tom Cotton. I could maybe title this show Beware the Warmonger or something. I don't know. I mean, this is a big part of what I do. But again, because it's one of the most heavily propagandized thing to us, the media is all about these things. The media cheerlead us into Iraq. They give cover. They report these false flag attacks in Syria like they're facts. The media will report that the Russians hacked the DNC when there's no evidence of this. The media is just all on board, and I guess it's just the big corporate ownership of these things that all benefit. They're part of the war machine that like these things, but the media is pointless. It's the biggest propaganda machine. Again, you know, I play that Paul Harvey thing. If you think that Iran is the threat to the United States and not the fact that we're building an empire, well, the Soviet Union didn't collapse because we attacked them. The Soviet Union collapsed because they couldn't keep an empire going. Ditto for Rome and every other country that's come before us. Yet these are the empire builders. Tom Cotton's one of them, too. I hate to burst anybody's bubble. This was Tom Cotton on Firing Line talking about how easy the Iran war is going to be. Does this remind anybody of what we heard before Iraq? Greeted like liberators, 2 months tops. That's what we heard for Iraq, right?
Could we win a war with Iran?
Yes.
That didn't take you a second.
Two strikes, the first strike and the last strike.
What are the conditions or the circumstances that would justify going to war with Iran?
Well, if Iran struck out militarily against the United States or against our allies in the region, then I would certainly expect a devastating response against Iran.
As somebody who fought in two fronts in the Middle East, both in Iraq and in Afghanistan, do you think it would be a good idea to go to war with Iran?
No, I don't advocate military action against Iran. I'm simply delivering the message that if Iran were to attack the United States, it would be a grave miscalculation on their part, and there would be a furious response. Now, we don't want to govern Iran. We don't want to rule 80 million Iranians. We want 80 million Iranians to be able to govern themselves.
Where are you on regime change?
What I want is to have an outlaw regime change its behavior, to rejoin the civilized world and stop supporting terrorism and trying to overthrow the governments of so many of its neighbors.
Did you hear that? I'm sorry. How exactly does Tom Cotton or any of these people with a straight face go on national television and say it's time for any administration of any country anywhere to stop overthrowing governments? How do they possibly do that? Do I need to list them? Afghanistan, Iraq. We tried to overthrow the government of Syria. We did topple and have the leader of Libya dragged out into the streets and sodomized to death. We are currently have picked a new president for Venezuela. Our whole foreign policy is regime change. John Bolton is on record saying that the regime in Tehran will be changed. This is our national security advisor. How in the world do they go on television and point to other countries and say they've got to stop toppling other governments? And I urge you to look at this map. You know, I'm no fan of the Iranian government. Good Lord. No, I'm not living in Iran. I don't want to live there. You go look at a map. Do an internet search. U.S. military bases around Iran. I counted 44. It's a very interesting map. Can you imagine if the Chinese encircled our country? How thrilled we would be with that? If the Chinese encircled our country, had troops all along the Canadian and the Mexican border, maybe they're in Cuba, they're in Bermuda, and they were blockading our country and telling us that we can't export any of our goods, and they're not going to let other ships come in and do business with us, and they took us off the international payment system so that we couldn't do anything. You think we would lash out at them? You think we might challenge the Chinese, or do you think we would just sit here and take it? I wouldn't expect that we would. Now, again, I am going to play this clip. I'm going to play this clip from Wesley Clark. Because the American people are being told right now that Iran is being aggressive, and if they lash out at the United States, and it's because of their support of terrorism in Yemen and other places. The problem with this is that this plan to topple Iran is decades old. Now, we were successful in doing that in 1953. We overthrew their government. Again, there's a good Netflix documentary on it if anybody's interested in actually learning any history, which is very few people, but hopefully listeners to this show. It's on Netflix, or actually I think it's on Amazon Prime. It's called American Coup, and it talks about how we just went in and through the CIA and Operation Ajax, went in and overthrew the government of Iran. Now, I don't know if another country came in here in 1953 and overthrew the government of the democratically elected government of the United States in 1953, if we would still harbor any resentment. I don't know. Americans have the memory of a goldfish, apparently, so maybe we wouldn't really be bothered, but maybe the Iranians have got a longer memory than that. Anyway, this, for context, is so important. This Wesley Clark clip is so important because what happens is these plans are made for empire building and regime change and nation building and all these things long in advance, and then they just wait and wait for the right opportunity. And the problem is that Iraq wasn't a two-month war, was it? We're there 15 years. Afghanistan now 18 years almost we've been in Afghanistan. So these planners aren't infallible. John Bolton, everything he touches is a disaster, and yet he still sits atop our national security apparatus here. And so they got bogged down in Afghanistan. They got bogged down in Iraq. There was no good exit point. And maybe they don't want an exit point. The money is made on the war itself, on continually expanding these things. It's not in going in and winning something and then leaving and bringing everybody home and stopping the spending on military stuff. The true success for the war profiteers is to keep these things going. But they don't have exact timelines. Things don't move exactly right. And what happens is maybe they get a little greedy and they keep us in some of this stuff a little bit too long, and the American people start to kind of sour on these endless wars and the 400,000 troops we've gotten treated right now for traumatic brain injuries, TBIs. And so the American people are a little soft, and so they've got to wait until some opportunity comes. They apply maximum pressure. This is actually a term that they use. They exert maximum pressure on a country, and then they just sit and wait for them to make one mistake, to retaliate in one small way, and then it's off to the races. And when that happens, The American people, through our Mockingbird media, will be told, look, we have to act. Look what Iran just did. And we'll point to it like it's a current event that we, you know, you just heard Tom Cotton say, and you'll hear all our foreign policy. Well, we don't want war with Iran, but if they lash out at the United States or any of our allies or our interests, you'll hear that term a lot, we will have no choice but to, as Donald Trump said, end them as a country. And everybody will focus on the event and then our response to it. And ignore the fact that when you listen to this Wesley Clark clip, listen to the timeline of this. This was in 2001. This was right after 9/11, which means that they weren't meeting in a room putting together this plan within just days of 9/11. I would imagine there were a lot of things going on at that time. That means that these plans predated 9/11 because they had them ready to roll out immediately after the attacks. Just listen to the timing of this, and I'm tired of watching the American people be suckered every time.
About 10 days after 9/11, I went through the Pentagon and I saw Secretary Rumsfeld and Deputy Secretary Wolfowitz. I went downstairs just to say hello to some of the people on the Joint Staff who used to work for me, and one of the generals called me and he said, "Sir, you got to come in. You got to come in and talk to me a second." I said, "Well, you're too busy." He said, "No." He says, "We've made the decision we're going to war with Iraq." This was on or about the 20th of September. I said, "We're going to war with Iraq? Why?" He said, "I don't know." He said, "I guess they don't know what else to do." So I said, "Well, did they find some information connecting Saddam to Al-Qaeda?" He said, no. He says, "There's nothing new that way. They just made the decision to go to war with Iraq." He said, "I guess it's like we don't know what to do about terrorists, but we've got a good military and we can take down governments." And he said, "I guess if the only tool you have is a hammer, every problem has to look like a nail." So I came back to see him a few weeks later, and by that time we were bombing in Afghanistan. I said, "Are we still going to war with Iraq?" And he said, "Oh, it's worse than that." He said, he reached over on his desk, he picked up a piece of paper, and he said, I just got this down from upstairs, meaning the Secretary of Defense's office, today. And he said, "This is a memo that describes how we're going to take out 7 countries in 5 years, starting with Iraq and then Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and finishing off Iran."
Finishing off with Iran. That was in 2001. And believe me, that plan was in place. If you look back at things, there was a document called the group Project for a New American Century, where they had this, I can't remember, Rebuilding America's Defenses, something like that, in 1999, I believe. My year's maybe off by one or so. But they were making these plans for this empire building back in 1999, 2000, and you hear in 2001 they had this 7 countries list, finishing off with Iran. They're just behind schedule. But that is the plan. They're dragging Donald Trump into this. They're going to put him into a box. He's allowed the snakes. He's allowed the Pompeos. And as I say, Pompeo and Bolton, they don't care if Trump is reelected. They don't care. Both of them, Pompeo is planning on running for the Senate anyway. And he'll do it on his great foreign policy experience. He's planning on going off and making his own career, where he will enter the Senate and then he will run for president in 6 or 8 years. And John Bolton will just slither back into one of the think tanks, one of the pro-war think tanks that he's been involved with between each one of his government jobs as he's filtered in and out of this government promoting war for us. The war that costs our kids trillions and trillions of dollars. So don't think that they have Donald Trump's best interests at heart. And I believe an Iran war with Donald Trump would be the end of his presidency. Admiral Lord West, I made a joke, or it's not really a joke. If anybody wants to call in, I'm taking volunteers, both monetarily, because somebody out there supporting this, that's why I'm saying this. Somebody out there listening to the sound of my voice is all in on us taking down Iran. I can't even get the names right. It's exactly like Iraq. And so it's a Freudian slip. some of you out there believe that this is somehow American leadership and it is the Americans exerting power against a radical regime. It's actually a government unless we target it for change. Then it becomes a regime. You think it's a radical regime in Iran that is an existential threat to the United States, and so they must be dealt with. You've got this war hysteria going. You're all pumped up. And so I say to you, I will take volunteers, both financial and physical. If you've got kids you want to send over there, and it turns out there was talk a couple of weeks ago about 120,000 troops needed for an engagement with Iraq. Iran. I'm telling you, it might as well be. It's like Groundhog Day over there. That's what it is. It's Groundhog Day. The American people falling for the exact same rhetoric that we fell for within Iraq. Admiral Lord West, the former First Sea Lord of the Royal Navy, gave a dire assessment of the potential conflict as tempers flare in the Middle East. He told Daily Star Online the U.S. would need at least, anyone? 1 million troops to successfully pacify Iran, and a half-baked attack could throw the region further into chaos. The 50-year Royal Navy veteran warned, quote, idiots, unquote, in both the U.S. and Iran are dangerously hyping tensions. 1 million troops. Now, what does this guy know? We've been told 120,000, and Tom Cotton says two strikes, and we're done. I don't know. We've had 1 million people funnel through the VA for treatments from the wars over the past 30 years, I believe it is. 1 million people are in VA treatment right now. Not because they've suffered. They haven't all suffered injuries from wars. But that's how many people we've had to funnel through all of these engagements. We may be able to just double that with one attack on Iran. This is mass insanity for anybody who supports this belligerence with Iran, 601-879-0002. I'll take your call on the other side of this break.
Mike Madison here. All of us should be flying our U.S. flag. And now's the perfect time to contact a complete flag source to have a flagpole installed at your home or business. For a limited time, all U.S. flags up to 5x8 along with flagpole setups are 15% off. That's 15, 20, and 25-foot in-ground kits, sectional, and aluminum. House spinner poles will keep your flag from wrapping in the wind, and a complete flag source has all of the right brackets. Visit a complete flag source, I-55 North Frontage Road, Jackson, or online at CompleteFlags.com.
After 15 years on Saturday, the Iraqi parliament held a vote that would ban military troops. Now, the strangest thing is, though, first of all, Iraq does not want us launching attacks against their neighbor Iran from Iraq. That's no good for Iraq. Apparently, they don't have a problem with them right now. But I have not been able to find, and I'm actually doing a search, if you'll pardon me for 1 second here. I'm actually doing a search right now to see if anything came across. So that vote was supposed to be held on Saturday and was expected to pass pretty easily. And then I saw no news on it this weekend. I searched several times yesterday and couldn't find what the results of that vote were. But what's still, the headlines are the vote was supposed to take place on Saturday, but no resolution of that. So I don't know exactly what happened. Iraq's parliament was already bristling under Pentagon talk of staying in Iraq and Trump saying that the U.S. was staying in Iraq to keep an eye on Iran. The recent escalation of U.S. rhetoric about a war against Iran has sparked action within the parliament. On Saturday, Iraq will be voting on a bill that would aim to expel all foreign troops from Iraqi soil and singles out U.S. troops in particular as needing to leave. The bill is endorsed by Iraq's two top Shiite blocs. If you don't understand the difference to the Sunni-Shiite situation over there, then you really shouldn't be talking about any of the things that go on in the Middle East. They expect it to pass very easily. What happens then is the real question. Iraq's parliament is already being spun as pro-Iran factions. And it's been a long time since U.S. officials, Pentagon or otherwise, gave any indication that they thought staying in Iraq was up to the Iraqi government. Just think about this. Can you imagine the Chinese coming in, toppling our government, occupying our country for 15 years, and then refusing to leave? Our Congress somehow reestablishes itself. We've got a president. The voters are sick of the Chinese patrolling the streets in the United States. And we say, hey, thanks for whatever. Can you please go? We're about to start a war with Canada. We really don't want a war with Canada. Can y'all please get off our soil, conduct your war from somewhere else? And China going, no, it's not your choice. We're here. We liberated you. We set you free. Can you imagine? But apparently there's nothing for that. And one other quick headline on this. I mean, if there's, again, anybody out there want to defend us, our actions against Iran? The funding... This is almost funny. It's pathetic is what it is, but it's almost funny. The funding request by the Pentagon was intended to reimburse the group for costs incurred while participating in the talks, including supplies, food, accommodation, and transportation, according to Kevin Spicer, a spokesman for Representative Peter Volosky. The Pentagon asked for money for us to reimburse the Taliban for all of their travel expenses, food, lodging, everything for coming to peace talks in Afghanistan. The U.S. taxpayer is going to pay their traveling expenses. We were going to reimburse them. Taxpayer dollars again. As Roll Call points out, the Taliban is rich, netting by some estimates at least $800 million per year. Now, where do you think they get their $800 million per year in Afghanistan? From opium trafficking and related activities while having battled troops for over 18 years. Afghanistan's opium trade in 2017 was estimated to be valued at between $4.1 and $6.6 billion, according to the UN Office on Drugs and Crime. The Taliban is believed to be netting about 20% of that, the U.S. military command in Afghanistan has reported. If those figures are accurate, the Taliban earns more than $800 million a year on drugs, and U.S. officials have said this drug money funds most of the Taliban's activities. Now, here's the capper on that. Moreover, quote, Afghanistan's opium trade has, in turn, contributed to a surge in opioid-related deaths in the United States that hit nearly 48,000 in 2017, according to federal statistics. Why am I having trouble on this show? Why am I not seeing a society absolutely up in arms about these foreign interventions that we're doing? Think about this. We've spent 18 years in Afghanistan. The Taliban controls more of the country now than when we got there. Now that we're saying we want peace talks, the Taliban are so uninterested in peace talks because everything's going their way that they're like, if you'll pay our lodging and transportation and give us a per diem, I don't know, I guess we'll come up there and talk to you. They're so uninterested in the peace talks that they're not going to even come and participate unless U.S. taxpayers pay them to come. And they've got $800 billion a year coming in from the heroin that has bloomed since our occupation. The heroin production, the opium production in Afghanistan is hundreds of times what it was when we got there in 2001. And that heroin has found its way to the United States and is killing our own citizens. I mean, there's about 50 things wrong in those last few sentences that I said. I don't even have time in the rest of the show to cover them all. And I am watching a nation being led into another one of these catastrophes. And I'm the outlier. I'm the weirdo. I'm this radical out there talking against these things. When that story right there, it's four paragraphs long. I could take those four paragraphs and do the rest of the week on exactly what that's about. I'm not the smartest guy in the room. If somebody like me can figure this out, why can't masses of people figure this out?
If you're considering renovations, remodels, or roofing, call on Tri-County Restoration. Do you have an insurance claim? We work with all insurance companies. Tri-County offers kitchen and bath remodels, wood floor refinishing, patio and sunroom additions, and is a GAF-certified roofing contractor. And Tri-County Restoration can handle new construction for that home you've always dreamed of. Call Tri-County Restoration, 601-856-2530, or visit our website, tcr.ms. That's tcr.ms.
All right, final segment here. I guess I'll finish up with this story. I find this story fascinating. Our problems may be bigger than Iran, Venezuela, North Korea, Russia. Since 2015, dozens of Navy F-18 fighter jets have encountered unidentified aerial phenomenon. They're calling them UAPs now, once commonly referred to as UFOs, off the east coast of the United States, some not far from the nation's capital. Encounters have been reported by other military aircraft and civilian airliners elsewhere in the U.S. and abroad, too, including videos shot by airline passengers. What these UAPs were and who was flying them, whether friends, foes, or unknown forces, remains a mystery. This is on The Hill. This is not from the National Enquirer. That's what I think is very interesting about this story. What these UAPs were and who was flying them, whether friends, foes, or unknown forces, remains a mystery, yet careful examination of the data inevitably leads to one possible disturbing conclusion. A potential adversary of the United States has mastered technologies we do not yet understand to achieve capabilities we cannot yet match. This is The Hill. Again, I'm going to keep repeating this. This is The Hill. This is not National News. This is not The Sun. This is not a tabloid thing. This is The Hill saying this. It's long past time for Congress to discover the answers to those questions and to share at least some of its conclusions with the public. The U.S. government came a large step closer to confirming the reality of UAPs when the U.S. Navy acknowledged in late April that, quote, there have been a number of reports of unauthorized and or unidentified aircraft entering various military-controlled ranges and designated airspace in recent years. Now, this was interesting. Let me get down to this other paragraph in here. Because it kind of tells you exactly what we're up against. It's not just this. Again, this is from The Hill. I want to keep saying that. You have not tuned. I mean, I believe I could be considered a conspiracy theorist by the low bar that's set at. Because essentially, conspiracy theorists now, in the way the mainstream media and the government likes to portray it, is anybody who does not believe exactly what comes out of the government's mouth. Even though they're shown to lie time and time and time again, when they put out an official story and the media runs with it, if you disagree with it or challenge it or point out the inconsistencies in the story, you are a conspiracy theorist. So by that metric, I am a conspiracy theorist because I understand conspiracies exist and our media and our government lies to us. So I try to get down to the truth of those things. The truth is just a theory in the world we live in today. But this is from The Hill. Listen to this. Exactly what these military and civilian airline pilots are seeing. It's not just, this is from The Hill, it's not just that the UAPs that military pilots are encountering are strange. No paint, rivets, wings, antenna, safety lights, transponders, or exhaust, but they sometimes are so fast and maneuverable that they defy our understanding of physics. For example, some of these vehicles appear to withstand forces of acceleration far greater than maximum design limits of any man-made aircraft. No wonder some military witnesses, often pilots who are scientists or engineers themselves, actually lean towards the hypothesis that we are not, that they are not from this world. Like all good scientists, these pilots recognize that our theories must adjust to facts and new information, however daunting, not the other way around. I have said here on the show that just about the only thing that would convince me that I've been wrong all along on whether it's war or endless debt or any of the things that that the government does as it grows into this monstrosity is if they know of an impending alien invasion and the aliens really like sand. Whoever has the most sand will be friends with the aliens won't attack. And so that's why we're in the Middle East. We're trying to corner the sand market. And then I'll go, oh, they were doing this for the good of the American people. Outside of that, I think the Middle East entanglements are a mess. Or if there is a giant meteor headed towards this earth. And of course, they don't want to panic the people. So running up a bunch of debt, knowing that our time is limited anyway, really doesn't make any difference. Those are really the two scenarios that I can say would possibly explain the behavior of the federal government of the United States in my eyes and give them a pass. I will, at that point, admit I was wrong. That's all the time I got. See you tomorrow. Bye.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't.